Are you feeling saintly? I didn't say you were, but are you feeling it? It probably is a bad idea if you claim it. It's much better to be named it by someone else. But have you beheld the saints that are around you? You can touch them and see them. Now, St. Paul said, when he addressed the churches to which he had gone, to the saints at one place or another. So it's quite appropriate that those of us who are part of such a community are a part of the communion of saints. And this hymn is one of my favorites. It's really one that we ought to get a hold of marvelously, because it gets the feel of what it means to be in the commitment, to be in the joy, and then to be in the relationship. Now, the Roman Catholic Church has made it a little difficult to be a saint. I think it used to be 3 miracles. I think you can get by with 2 now. But I'm a little more liberal than that, and I think it's the mood and approach that we go on. And this is where this hymn so beautifully and creatively describes it for us. That we're, if you remember, the Apostles' Creed said, I believe in the communion of saints and the forgiveness of sins. So we've got a communion of saints. So loosen up your description of the saint. And my favorite description came from a little child who grew up in a church like this and had these wonderful stained glass windows. And in Sunday school, when somebody said, well, what's a saint? And two mommy may have heard, they said, well, they're the people the light shines through. Hello. That's what it's about. How much light is getting through you and me, and how much light are we able to shed on our time? Now, this Psalm 34, we really should have had the whole thing because it's a great psalm. And it's really like it's a prayer and praise of that, and that intermingling with the Spirit of God in their lives. And you can imagine the people over the ages have prayed and sung and seen this and found in it great beauty. It's a song and prayer of praise. And then you come to the Sermon on the Mount, which is another part of the text for this Sunday. And that, I think it kind of upgrades the Ten Commandments. Because the Sermon on the Mount is not something that Jesus said just in passing. He said it to people who gathered around him, and This is the way we ought to live. This is a pattern for our living. So read those over and think about them. Meditate on them. Because if we're going to be a part of the community of saints, but I like also in the old creed, and I believe in the communion of saints and the forgiveness of sins, the two got to go together. We say the Lord's Prayer, forgive, you know, but forgiveness and sainthood are all interwoven and interlarded with one another. But the problem in our own time is we get afraid of the saints. So we domesticate them. You put them in plastic or in some other thing, or you put them in a window, but don't get too close because they might be uncomfortable. And saints are really subversive. They really call into question what we're doing, because what they're trying to do is to recapture the religious image of life so we work toward transformation. And the problem is that their openness to this is met by the religious folks who are rigid. who want to preserve a status quo, who want to resist real change. And it's easy how insidiously that gets into our consciousness in committees and budgets and programs and our approach to life, to open us up. Because the rigidity of the religious is that we're more concerned with power and with prestige and possessions, and the church has got caught up in that over all ages, and when we're supposed to be servant people, not masters. And Constantine did a terrible service to the church when he made it the official religion of the empire, because then they sold out, we sold out, we're still in it, for power, prestige. But the examples is Jesus always refreshingly. And when you talk about Jesus, I want to talk about somebody who loves you, somebody who really cares for you, not somebody who's judging. It's much more important to be connected than it is to be right. It brings us together. And Jesus, with his examples and with what he was doing, was saying, don't believe, he didn't say don't believe in me, but he didn't say believe in me. He said, follow me. He said, follow me. And then he gave us the Beatitudes to be kind of a guide and a way to go. And St. Paul, when it came to him, he said, be my witnesses. He said, you're going to be ambassadors. Ambassadors of Christ. So you can do, you remember what he said? You're going to be ambassadors so you can do what? Hello? What are you ambassadors for? What? Yeah, but he had a special term. I don't know if he's used it, but that's what's reported. But he said, so we can be reconciled one to another. Yeah, he wanted to bring us together so we could be recognized with one another. And in Romans, I think it was 12, he said, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by what? By the what?
A complete change of mind.
Yeah, renewing your heart and mind. So we're transformed. We're not converted, we're transformed. Conversion isn't enough. It's transformation that's required so that we can be there. And then one I really have great fondness for, St. Francis, who's on the bulletin, is over here. And when you go out sometime, just walk by and see that. So see how the light comes through in that beautiful window. But the problem is we've domesticated Francis and we like him in the garden and make him a bird bath. Now, he would have a hard time with that. But he wouldn't wear it because he was the first ecologist. He was the first one, not the first one, but he was one of those who was conscious that you got to think about the earth. His praises weren't up here, they were down here because he was looking down. He was looking at the earth and the creatures and all that was about it. But St. Francis was a radical because he was raised in privilege. Hello. And then he had an epiphany. It was his burning bush. And you remember what happened to him when his burning bush was? He saw a leper. He'd never seen one before. It was like Buddha when he was protected and then suddenly saw a poor one. And Francis was so stunned that the human body could be so desecrated by leprosy that he was overwhelmed by compassion and kissed the leper. Tough one. And then the story goes about St. Francis that he was villages were being plagued by a wolf. And so the villagers were terrified. They were afraid to go out. It's like our fear of Ebola. We're afraid to go out. We're afraid to mix. And so the villagers said, come and help us. And so he went off, and they didn't come back for quite a while. And then they thought he was gone. The wolf had gotten him. Before long, he came back, and he was leading the wolf as a friend. And he taught the community how to respect the wolf and feed it. And the wolf said, you know, if you'll, St. Francis said, you feed it, he'll be your friend. But what Francis was really saying in this, now get this, what we really have to do is kiss the leper in ourselves and embrace the wolf in ourselves. And when we can acknowledge our limitations and our sickness and our power hunger, then we can bless. He asked, what did he say over here? What St. Francis said, I want you to be what? Be an instrument. We got to do a better job at loosening you up here. You were incredible last night at the hoedown, and everybody, and I thought, I was seeing all that dancing that Mark was leading. I said, this is terrific. We got to get some of this into our worship. So you can get the feeling of it. And so he said, we have to, and once you can recognize that we have those weaknesses in ourselves, we're willing to accept them in others and willing to work together and make a change. Now, Martin Luther King, somebody, you know, wouldn't want to call him a saint, but he sure was somebody the light came through. And Vincent Harding, who just died this year, was a speechwriter and friend of King, and he helped write some of his speeches. And he's done a book which Fellowship of Reconciliation has put out and said talked about the Martin Luther King, the unwelcome hero. Because he said, we are all excited about the speech in the Lincoln Memorial. I have a dream. But the real message of King was not delivered on part of it on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, but was in the pulpit of Riverside Church, where he'd gone through the time where he was struggling with what it means to bring racial harmony. And he said, you can't have racial harmony when you have poverty. You can't have racial harmony or community when you have war. You can't have these divisions that are pulling us apart. We have to face the division in our community and in our lives. And so he was moving from the South to Chicago. And Vincent Harding, who helped write that speech, said, maybe I wish I didn't, because I think that speech helped get him killed. Because change is so painful, so difficult. And I'm impressed by one of my great mentors and saints, is Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. And the week before King died, he introduced Martin Luther King to a community of rabbis up in Rochester. And he said, the future of America depends. This is Rabbi Heschel, who knew the prophets better than anybody. The future of America depends on how it hears the message and the meaning of Dr. King. Now, I want to give you some help. And I think on the recommendation I had for reading this week in the Meeting House Monthly, I recommended Bob Herbert's new book on losing our way, an intimate portrait of a troubled America. And he was with the Times for 10 years. He was a great observer of American life. But I recommend that to understand where we are and what we're about, that these times are serious. This isn't time saying tut, tut, tut. This is a time to roll up our sleeves and confront the issues that are facing us, and Bob Herbert is the one to help us do it. He could do it in such an amazing way. And then to understand what he's calling us to, there's another book I recommended last month, and I hope the study group will look at it, and it's A Path Appears by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. And if you read the review of that, and he talks about transforming lives and creating opportunity. And a way appears, and it does, and it is. And I love what the reviewer last week said about the book of Kristof. And it was in the magazine section, book review section. And he said, in the wrong hands, A Path Appears is a dangerous book. You wouldn't want to leave it around, for your teenager might glance at it and he might get diverted from that reassuring ambition to be a banker, and frankly, only scoundrels and saints can read this book safely. It depends on where you are if you read it. But he said, everyone else will find it upsetting and uplifting in equal measure. I certainly did. If you want to carry on with your life just as it is, best you miss it. How about that? Now that's a call to repentance. I think that's a call to action. That's a call to life. And so where are you? What are you willing to do? You see, what we're confronting, crisis all around, is fear. Roosevelt was right. Jesus was right. All of them, I'd say, we can't have fear. We have to risk what? The opposite of fear. Loving. We have to risk love. And Jesus said, take up a cross and follow me. Now, cross doesn't mean something is inflicted. It means a choice to change the direction of our land and our priorities and our possibilities and our beliefs in people. The cross is a conscious decision to grasp and wrestle with the injustices of our time. And then Paul said, be transformed and renew your mind. In 1 Corinthians, he said he learned. 1 Corinthians, he said, learn to. 1 Corinthians 13. What was it? Well, I put you to sleep. You know, it's on love. Things are that, you know, faith, hope, and love. These are foundation stones on which we build our lives, and we talk about it, and we say them, and we sing them. But friends, it's now time to quit preaching and gut to meddling in our lives and in our time. And Francis said, I want you to be an instrument. And you know the whole chorus of that. It's over here on the window. Come look at it. Kathleen Norris spoke at Christ Church last week, and she's a wonder. We got to get her here sometime. She is good. And she was talking about the Psalms and the desert fathers and mothers. And she told about a pious monk in the desert. These were the ones who got out of town after the Constantine set things up and the church got too much power and too much privilege. And this monk was pretty sure he got a grip on things. And somebody told him that there was a merchant in town who was even better than he was. And he thought, oh, my land, who's that? So he went into the monk and he went to his home, and the businessman received him and gave him tea, and he spent the night with him. And in the night, there were all these drunks and raucous people going up and down the street. And the next morning, the monk said, how in the world do you put up with that rabble? And the businessman said, well, they're just on their way to the kingdom. Hello? On their way to the kingdom. Everybody we're with is on the way to God's kingdom. And his arms are open. And his table is for anybody who hungers. There's not a separation. Can you learn to love in a new way? Can you be bold in the practice and not be afraid? Because fear will kill us, but love will save the world. And he's inviting us to his table to give us the food to do it. Amen.